This podcast is sponsored by Runway, air traffic control for your mobile releases. Put your releases on autopilot. Runway will shepherd your release from kickoff to submission to release with no manual intervention. A single source of truth for your releases. Runway integrates with your favorite tools for a bird's eye view over release progress and blockers. Make your releases collaborative. Get a rich, contextualized release runbook that makes capturing responsibilities and tracking tasks crystal clear. Get more control on your releases on App Store and Play Store. Point your browser to runway.team. Thank you for sponsoring my podcast. I'm also revamping my newsletter. Check it out, appforce1.net to sign up. You can also find a sign-up link on my Twitter profile. Welcome to AppForce 1, episode 87. My name is Jeroen Leenaerts and I've been developing software for over 20 years, developing iOS apps for over 10 years, and I'm running the Dutch GoCats for over 9 years. If you are an iOS app developer, you should listen to my podcast because it will keep you updated on interesting articles, conferences, and events you might not have heard about. In this episode, I'm going to talk about using measurements from Foundation for values in Swift charts, eager grids with Swift UI, flow navigation with Swift UI 4 implementing the new navigation stack, localizing a modularized application, using Xcode creating reusable and shareable color palettes, experimenting with live activities, supporting universal links in a Swift UI application, and common Swift task continuation problems. Right after my vacation, it was heads down mode again. At my work, we had a sort of restructuring of the group I'm a part of, and this meant a lot of things have changed in how my day-to-day looks. I now lead developer experience at Stream within developer relations. This involves setting up a lot of project-related things. From developer experience, we work very closely with developer advocacy, and because of this, we chose to set up a shared task board. This way, we can easily hand over work or share the workload for specific tasks. I already had a lot of podcast work I needed to do last week, so I couldn't fit a recording session for my regular episode. But I do have a really cool special episode I did with Josh Holtz from RevenueCat. Keep an eye out for that one later this week. If all goes well, it should be done soon. For reasons I'm not sharing yet, I put in some extra effort to the RevenueCat episode. I hope it will be an inspiring episode. Now let's dive into this week's articles. First, I want to begin with an article by Natalia Panfarova. Using measurements from Foundation for values in Swift charts. Natalia builds a bar chart comparing durations of nature walks in the Christchurch area. She is using the new Swift charts framework introduced this year and plots data of types that don't conform to plottable protocol by default, such as measurement unit duration. It is a fun, quick overview of how you can plot data by wrapping it in a helper class to make the data conform to the plottable protocol. Sample code is included, so definitely check it out. The next article is by Javier over at the Swift UI Labs. Eager grids with Swift UI. Back in 2020, we got Fuse to drag grids in Swift UI, Lazy V grid and Lazy H grid. 2 years later, we are getting yet another view to display views in a grid. However, this new addition is very different, not only in the way you use it, but also how it behaves internally. The views from 2020 were lazy. These new ones are eager. Lazy grids do not render or even instantiate views that are off-screen. The cell views are created only when they are scrolled in and stopped being computed as soon as they scroll out. For more details, check out the 2020 article Impossible Grids with Swift UI on the Swift UI Labs website. Eager grids, the topic of this post by Javier, are the opposite. Swift UI does not care if they are on or off-screen. All views are treated the same. This may present a performance problem with a very large number of cells. However, how much is a very large number is an impossible question to answer. That will depend on the complexity of your cell views. So, if lazy grids perform better, it begs the question, why would you use eager grids? The truth is, the eager grids have their benefits over lazy grids and vice versa. For example, eager grids support column spanning and lazy grids do not. Bottom line, performance is not the only factor to account for. In his article, you will explore these new grids so you can make a good informed decision when choosing one over the other. I must say that Javier did a very nice introduction on his article, so thanks for that. The third article is by Nick McConnell. Flow navigation with Swift UI implementing the new navigation stack. Previously, navigation view required explicitly defining navigation edges and the use of multiple flags, which could lead to confusion. The new approach uses a stack creating a non-UI representation of the existing navigation and works beautifully with our previous programmatic approach without many changes. This approach initially started with a review of a multi-screen onboarding flow with Swift UI. As with all multi-screen data flow, They often represent an interesting problem of how to decouple data, view, and navigation logic. In the article by Nick, you can read a lot more about his thoughts about using the new navigation stack. Next up is Paul Piela with Localizing a Modularized Application. Paul wrote a short piece about some of the things you will run into when localizing a modularized application. A modularized app is an app in which you have split the functionality of the app across multiple frameworks. This helps you isolate functionality and promotes a cleaner separation of concerns across your entire codebase. It can also improve your compilation times because the Swift compiler has fewer symbols to inspect when compiling a framework, especially if you apply scoping keywords like public and private well. I have used modularized architecture to great effect in a previous role of mine, and you can find a YouTube video of me talking about this topic, actually. Back to Paul's article. It's a good overview of some of the things you have to think about when adding localization to such an app, and I think just because of that, it's well worth your time to have a read of this one. The fifth article is by my colleague Amos Giamfi, Using Xcode, Creating a Reusable and Shareable Color Palette. Whether you are working on your own project or building an app for a customer in Xcode, color harmony is essential in ensuring consistency in your interface elements. Xcode allows you to build, manage, share, and reuse color sets in a new way. In Amos's article, you will learn how to create color schemes and reuse them in other Xcode projects. Having a full range of colors that can be shared and reused in different Xcode projects improves efficiency and workflow because it removes the time wasted in looking for colors that will work together in your projects. Additionally, it ensures consistency of color usage within your apps and projects. Historically, developers and designers create color palettes using design tools such as Adobe Illustrator, Sketch, or Figma. It turns out that the Swift developers can build these color collections and manage them directly inside Xcode using the built-in color picker. In this article, you will discover how to create a set of colors called Duochroma to use later to customize the look and feel of a sample stream chat Swift UI app. The techniques, tips, and tricks you learned in Amos's article will assist you in building coherent color schemes for your future Xcode projects. Ole Brakman has an article in which he shares his experience while experimenting with live activities. iOS 16 Beta 4 is the first SDK release that supports live activities. A live activity is a widget-like view an app can place on your lock screen and update in real time. Examples where this can be useful include live sports scores or train departure times. This article contains Ole's notes on playing with the API and implementing his first live activity. Ole's live activity is a display for a bike computer that he's been developing with a group of friends. In short, a group of friends and Ole designed a little box that connects to your bike's hub dynamo, measures speeds and distance, and sends the data via Bluetooth to an iOS app. The app records all your rides and can also act as a live speedometer when mounted on your bike's handlebars. It's this last feature that Ole wants to replicate in the live activity. Natasha Fadeva wrote the seventh article. She writes about supporting universal links in SwiftUI applications. Universal links allow us to connect iOS apps with its related website. When a user taps a universal link, they are redirected to a specific part of an iOS application if it is installed. If the app is not installed, the link opens a browser allowing the connected website to handle it. To support universal links, the following steps are required. First, creating and configuring an associated domain file. Second, adding the associated domain file to the related website. Third, adding an associated domain entitlement to the iOS app. And fourth, update your iOS application code to receive universal links and, if needed, route the user to a specific part of your app. Natasha takes a look at these steps in more detail. And the final article is by Leonardo Pugliesi, Common Swift Task Continuation Problems. The new Swift structured concurrency brings a whole new world of adventures and things that we can use to make our code more expressive and less prone to errors. Meanwhile, it also has a delightful syntax to write and read that makes your asynchronous code way easier to reason about. It is a really good API to learn and worth your time. One thing that the Swift engineering community thought when they were developing the new asynchronous API is that in some manner they should support a bridging way to connect your old closure-based APIs with the new async await world. And that is exactly what they did. The Swift team created the continuation API. This creates a suspension point in your code, and that is exactly what you need to use the new async await semantics. Leonardo will discuss some problems that can happen if you don't pay attention to the continuation problem in Swift. And those were the articles of this week. I wanted to highlight two meetups of Cocoaheads NL as well, in September and November. We're still working on the October meetup. Have a look at the meetup page of Cocoaheads NL. meetup.com/cocoaheadsnl. Also, I'm traveling to 360 IDEF in Denver at the end of this month. And the best part of that, I will get to meet a few people I met through my podcast in person for the very first time. Let me know if you will be at 360 IDEF through Twitter. I would love to give a high five there. I should be very easy to spot. I'm doing a talk on the Tuesday of the conference, and the rest of my time I am most likely close to the stream table or booth. I don't know the exact setup yet. My colleagues Amos and Stefan will be at SwiftConf. Amos will travel to iOS Dev UK. And if all details get arranged, I can share a bit more about Swift Leads in October too. Hopefully there's a confirmation of me traveling there soon. If you don't get to meet at a conference this year, let's stay in touch on Twitter. I love getting DMs and app mentions by people sharing their thoughts and insights. Also, if you are starting out as a software developer, I hope you've seen my tweet about how coding is like riding a bike. If you have any feedback, please send me a message to Twitter. My DMs are always open. And don't forget, if you like my podcast, can't meet me in person, you can still buy me a coffee. Link for that in the show notes. Talk to you again soon. Lead Developer, best practices and tips for lead software developers. PDF, MOBI and EPUB format. AppForce1.net/lead developer. All one word.